So your calls, 1300 736 736. Derm, welcome to you. Firstly, great to have you on the program.
Thank you very much, Duano. As per usual, my pleasure.
And it's interesting looking back now at the way that we sort of talk about the 80s and 90s. You mentioned something about Buddha Hocking, who is in the AFL Hall of Fame, and deservedly so, Gary Hocking, about his toughness and what toughness kind of meant in that late 80s, early 90s period. It meant sort of ball-getting toughness. It meant players with skill who didn't flinch when they were going for the ball kind of toughness. It wasn't the thuggery that maybe preceded it. It was an evolution to that next level of football becoming semi-professional and the toughness being part of the elite standard of skill set that Buddha also had. And it was an interesting thing to hear you talk about yesterday.
Yeah, it's amazing that in all forms and walks of life, there is creeping. And the creeping, you know, it creeps along and changes standards. And it just creeps forward or creeps backwards in terms of life standards. And what is now, we look back at the 90s and think, oh, that was a bit more robust. And then the 90s, look at the 80s and think, oh, that was very brutal. And then someone like Alan Jeans would tell me, you know, in the 80s, he'd say, son, the most brutal times of football that have ever been were the early 70s. Those St Kilda Hawthorn clashes, that 71 grand final, those types of games, he said, they were just dastardly and brutal. So it does creep along through eras. So a lot of the time for the better. Sometimes, you know, perhaps in a competitive world where we look at some sports that are going through the roof, and like MMA is just goes through the roof, and that's probably the ultimate of brutality, but people love watching it. So it's the beauty is in the eye of the beholder, but we're talking football, and it has become more sanitized, but it is still a very dangerous game to play.
So it's not the 89 grand final I actually got you on to talk about specifically, Derm, because we did that last week, and various shows on this radio station and other radio stations have done it, no doubt, and it will get played on the weekend, sometime Sunday or Monday. But it was actually something else you raised with me. I got shut down by Chris Mew quite a few times. I wanted to pick your brain on some of the guys who, when you look back at the stats now, they don't necessarily justify how good they were, how much... Yeah. They were superstars in their position. Chris Mew is not in the Australian Football Hall of Fame. 230 games, 5 premierships for Chris Mew. Centre-half back in Hawthorn's team of the century. He's not in there. I look back at a couple of guys like, you know, Paul Couch, 259 games. He won the 89 Brownlow in a year that had so many superstars, you couldn't list them. If you went through a top 50, you know, you'd probably want to list another 50. That's how good those late 80s were. And he won the Brownlow that year. Geelong team of the century, 3-time Geelong best and fairest. But he's only a 2-time All-Australian, which people look back at and say, well, he's only two. But he's not in the Hall of Fame either. And I look at some of those guys that are of that
there.
Era. Hey?
Is Couchy not in the Hall of Fame?
I don't think he is, to be honest. I might, you can tell me that I'm wrong, but I'm not sure. Chris Mew certainly isn't, is he?
No, well, we know Mewy isn't, and as, in a weird way, you know what we honestly believe? The players who played with him, there are so, well, they won 5 premierships in and around that era in 8 years. So they're going to have a team littered with champions. And it almost gets to the stage, we believe Mewy suffered from this. How many from the one in the one jumper can you have in the Hall of Fame? And it's like, well, let's not put him in. Let's get somebody from another team to even it and balance it out a bit. Mewy was a star, mate. The one great thing about being Chris Mew's teammate, I didn't have to play on him because he stitched me up at training every time. You're not the long ranger, Dwayne. He used to stitch me up at training. You know, in those old days, once a week, you would have had it under John Devine and maybe even Blighty. We definitely had it under Yabby, and before my time, we had it under John Kennedy Sr. You know, you do your warm-up, you do 7 or 8 minutes of skill work and sharpen up, and then the coach would say, righto, pair up, and you'd be into match practice. I used to get to the opposite side of the group from Mui because I just didn't want to play on him. It'd actually shatter your confidence.
1-300-736-736. If you have got a recollection of some of the great players, that the stats don't necessarily do them justice. Brett Ratton, I think, was due to be entering the Australian Football League Hall of Fame this year. I think if we did have a Hall of Fame, I think there was a letter given to him saying that he would be put in this year. He's not in the Hall of Fame as it stands right now. 1-300-736-736. Some of the guys, when you look back now, because we are seeing a few of these games broadcast on Fox Footy. I've been lucky enough to be part of the broadcast of a few of them from 83 and even earlier than that, and some of them later than that, that the stats don't do them justice. Take a few of your calls. 1-300-736-736 on the Werribee Kia open line. People that stick in your memory as some of the greats of all time but might not be in the AFL Hall of Fame. And, Derm, we look at some of the players of that era as it slowly evolved into professionalism, and it did turn in the 90s to a different game. You played across the eras where it became, you know, amateur and a little bit of fun, and then there was a bit of money in the game, and then you really did have to concentrate on your skill set. And some of the guys back then were two-sided, whereas some of the skill sets we see now are not two-sided. They got one side and that's it. There were guys, as you mentioned, like Buddha Hocking, even Shane Hamilton, who will never be in the Hall of Fame, but he was equally adept at both sides of his body watching that 89 game back then. Their skill set was superb and would hold them in good stead now.
No doubt. You've got role players in league football now. You've still got your stars, you've still got your champions, and it's a wonderful game when we get the good games to watch. But you have players who are role players, and their friends, like Alistair Clarkson, will coach a team, and it's almost like American football, good on. You've got a lineman, and he can make the Hall of Fame. He can be one of the all-time greats. He might never touch the ball. He just learns how to explode out of a crouch and push forward. And his playing zone is about 3/4 of a metre. And he just guards. And he might be one of the greats of all time, but he never touches it. That's a role player. Alistair Clarkson has role players. So you might not have to learn how to kick on your left foot. You might not have to do that, but you've got to be damn good at what he wants you to do. So we had role players. And in the old days, I mean, the world's changed. What was commonplace for, you know, kids like myself who were born in 1964, I would guarantee you, as long as it wasn't heavy rain, between the ages of 7 and 13, 14, when girls start to kick in, I would have been out on the front street, on the street, kicking the footy with my brother or my mates at least three nights a week. I defy anyone in football season now to drive through any suburb and see kids kicking the ball out in the road. Now, it might sound trite, but accumulatively, that could be 1 million kicks I had of the football by the time I was 15. And that's got to help your skill set. That has to help. It's almost Don Bradman-like for our era, you know, hitting the ball against the concrete wall. It sharpens you. If you do something repetitively for 1 million times, you're going to get a lot better at it. So every kid in my era was roughly the same. The skills were there because of the way we regarded the sport. We didn't have PlayStation and Xbox. We had a football, and in cricket season, we had a bat and a ball and a rubbish bin. And that's what we did. So it was a never-ending policy of going out there and being engaged in a physical pursuit.
You'd also, I remember it was an era for me, I'm not sure what it was like where you grew up in Frankston, but in Paraki you'd go down an oval, or if you walked down the street and there were kids you didn't know kicking the football, you'd join in with their kick. You'd say, hey, can I join you guys at a park? And you'd have a kick with them, even if you didn't know them. And you walked away not even knowing their name. It seemed to be an era where there was a trust factor where you could just go and join some other kicks with a kick. And you'd also have, well, I don't remember ever, I reckon I went for years having a kick every recess and every lunchtime at school. Kids, I don't think they do that now, do they? Every lunch and every recess. First thing, straight out there kicking, and that's the last thing. When the bell goes, you still want to have two kicks after the bell.
Absolutely. And then you'd get the teacher walking through the yard saying, come on, get the class. The other thing is, do you remember in grade prep? So grade prep for me was 1970. Grade one was 71. By grade two, in 1972, we got into tables and chairs. But in prep and grade one, we used to take our own little mat to school. We had a chalkboard that we would write on, and we would sit on the floor on your mat with your legs folded and a chalkboard, and that's what you did your work on. I can remember sitting on the floor after morning recess, after lunchtime, and not being able to fold my legs properly because there was too much mud on the jeans from diving in for the ball at lunchtime with the mud on the oval. You wouldn't care that, oh, that's going to get me muddy for the day. You loved it. And that was the era.
And before I let you go, the contested mark, the two-sided player is more of a rarity than ever because they are so adept at kicking with the outside of their dominant foot. So that little dink kick with the outside of their dominant kick foot is now an allowed kick by coaches. They didn't allow you to do that in the 80s. They said, use your left foot, son. And you had to have a left foot kick that went 40 as you get out of jail kind of kick. You weren't allowed to kick the banana. But the high mark, or at least the contested mark, is another thing that isn't something that you desperately need now in your repertoire as a key forward that you did need back then. You don't need to be two-sided now, and you don't need to be pulling down 5, 6, 7 contested marks a game if you're a centre-half forward like you did.
Well, the thing is, we've talked about this before. Your starting price for in terms of size for a key forward is probably 6'4", 6'4.5". And you've got to be a big man because you apart from, running to take up the zone when the opposition's got the ball and looking the ball in, you're a light pole that they try and drop the ball on the head of so that you can bring it to ground for the small players to work at and pressure and hold the ball in the forward line, a territory battle. So you're actually somebody who's got his position physically. If you can mark it, so much better. I mean, I'm sure Tom Lynch fits the bill there where he can mark it over there. Not too many of them, mark all that many much. But if you're averaging 2 contested marks a game now, you're a bloody star. And that is because of the saturation of the numbers around you. Whereas in our day, Dwayne, blokes our size could play centre-half forward because the ball, we took the meterage. We took the yardage in front of us as a team. So if somebody was coming out of the back line, they'd be under pressure. They wanted to hug the boundary. So you would place yourself to get on the end of the 50-metre kick on the run, and you would meet that ball in a mobile status. You would hit that ball at the top pace. So you had to time your lead, your time your arrival to the drop of the footy. And you might take a mark like that, getting punched in the back of the head. I will say, I look at it now and think, those slapping of the wrists and the hands and the punch to the back of the head to make sure your eyes suddenly look down at your knees when you go for the ball above your head, they were all accepted methods of spoiling. We talk about, grabbing the hands, punching the hands away now, and it's well spotted by the umpires. That would happen probably 2 to 4 times a quarter in the 80s. Somebody would grab your hand and the umpire would just naturally accept it as an accepted method of spoiling. So I look at that now and think, God, wouldn't that have been nice back in the day?
Get stronger hands.
They might be a bit tall for us these days.
Yeah, 6'2 now is not a centre-half forward's height. It's now wingman's height. But I think John Nicholls, Big Nick, was 6'1", and he was one of the greatest ruckmen of his era. Great to have a chat to you, Derm. We're about to open the lines. 1-300-736-736 is the number. Let's go straight to your calls on the Werribee Kia open line. The great Dermot Brereton. I'll catch you on the weekend, Derm. We'll work together then. SEN's own and Fox Footy's own as well, Dermot Brereton.